It's International Clearance, episode 19. I'm Joe Walker.
And I'm Scully.
There he is. Welcome to a delayed episode. But once again, don't worry. We said it was coming next week. That's all that matters. Just don't worry.
We are here.
You know, consistency is key. We went away for 3 years. So what do you expect? Do you know what I mean? Like, just be grateful we're still running it every week, all right?
What is it that Ashanti said? I'm not always there when you call, but I'm always on time. We're like the opposite. We're always on time, but we're always there when you call. Yeah.
We're like an old dog that you call from the other side of the house. You don't hear the running anymore, but we will peer around that corner eventually when you start.
Don't you worry.
But just open that pack of crisps, we'll get there eventually. If you are new to this show, International Clearance, this is a British podcast where we focus, chronicle, interview people born or raised in the UK that have gone to play football or coach football overseas. And we extend that into people that declare for other countries outside the UK, to national teams to play for. And it's befitting because right now we're in an international break. It's already underway and we've got plenty of news and updates. But that's all to come in a little bit. First of all, Scully, we have to hit a few important points, important stories at the club game since we were last on, because like Jesse Lingard, you remember last week, what was our chat about Jesse Lingard, right?
Well, you know, we're going to drip feed him in. Hopefully he's getting up to fitness. We're going to try and make sure that, you know, he's enjoying his football and he's going to have a good time over in South Korea, God willing. Yeah.
Yeah. That was our kind of conclusion that we drew, was, you know, he's come off the bench in his first two games, but you know, he hasn't played football in a year, so it's probably just a fitness issue, right? He's the marquee arrival. He'll take as long as he needs, and it's cool that they're actually confident enough to ease him in. Well, we've had an update, and it's a little bit more than that, because he did come off the bench again last week in a 2-0 win. But the interview after the game from Kim Gi-don, the FC Seoul manager, kind of clears up for us. He says, even though he came on as a substitute, he didn't work hard and avoided tussle. If you run less than a footballer who has played 90 minutes, you're not even a footballer. Fame doesn't win football games. If it did, I would have brought in a famous retired player. Close quote. He did say, you know, he wasn't writing Lingard off or anything. I don't think he can afford to. I think he might lose that battle if he does. But basically saying Jesse Lingard, this ain't a jolly.
It's a bit of a... You have to kind of stamp your authority, right, as a manager. Because let's be honest, a lot of our listeners may not be familiar with Kim Gi-don. And I'm sure Jesse wasn't himself, right? So he's kind of got to make sure you give him that boot and just be like, listen, my way or the highway. Because otherwise, Jesse's going to think it's a jolly up. He could do what he wants. And I'm not going to lie, this is looking like the R9 Paddy Power advert currently. Like, I love that advert that R9 has very clearly covered a payday, right? Like, he just has to run about, not trying to get involved. He's not running, not tracking back. And the manager tells him about it, and R9's like, well, you know, just there for 20 minutes, Kev. And then he leaves in his Rolls Royce. Yeah. Feels like Jesse's trying to do one of them. I'm here to tell you, Jesse, yeah, you have plenty of legs. How old is he? What, 29, 30?
He's 31.
I reckon you can still get 4 years off if you apply yourself, but you are not going to get that again in the top leagues unless you show people here and now that you're on it. The worst way to put yourself back on the shop window after making a massive decision to go to South Korea is to play poorly.
You're right. I think the manager here has gone, right, here's a signing that is getting percentage of the merchandise. He's getting probably paid more than everybody else here. And it's a different kind of star power to what they're used to. He can't allow him to have his own way. I don't know if it's a cultural thing about calling him out publicly like that, because I would think in England that would be kind of frowned upon. That's really kind of hanging a player out to dry. It might be different. You know, obviously these quotes are translated, so there might be a little thing lost there. Lingard hasn't particularly risen to any of this stuff publicly. I think his interview after the game was very about, I'm just concentrating on my football. I'm getting there game by game. But if it starts like and continues to play out as it is at the moment, it becomes more of a story, weirdly.
Do I think this will motivate Lingard? I don't know. I hope that Lingard realizes it will be really embarrassing if he doesn't play amazingly. Like, if you don't go there, turn it upside down, and then have people wondering if you can come back to Europe. I'm not going to say you failed, but I am going to say you're too young to spend the rest of your career barely keeping up appearances in Asia.
I agree. Talking of players that want to stand up and be counted, I think a player at Fenerbahce that is part of our international clearance contingent, if you like, has made himself a legend, a hero with his fans. Bright Asay Samuel. Did you see the footage, Scully?
I saw the footage.
My God. Turkish stadiums have had their issues for a long, long time. That's not new. It's been hot again, super hot. And Trabzonspor 2, Fenerbahce 3 looked like chaos. So it's a rivalry anyway, just because two big clubs. Fenerbahce win it late on. Doesn't go down well with the home fans. Ultras go on the pitch and they head towards the Fenerbahce players. Bright Asay Samuel says, "No, I'm not scared. I'm taking it to you." This guy's fully, like, faces concealed. He might have a weapon for all we know. Bright Asay Samuel charges at him and just goes to town on this guy. As in, the guy's on the floor. Bright Asay Samuel is just knocking seven shades of shite out of him. And that causes what looked like a lot of people start charging out of the stand onto the pitch to get involved.
And I'm kind of wondering what the Trabzonspor ultras were even planning anyway, because you're not going to run on pitch and stab a rival team member.
Like, I mean, but you've got to remember, this is a Turkish league. They kicked the shit out of a referee this season.
That is true.
And, you know, you can imagine the incident, it sparked all this mass chaos, loads of people on the pitch. The smarter Fenerbahce players are charging down the tunnel. Eventually, Bright Asay Samuel gets away. But the images of him kind of taking it to that Trabzonspor ultra has already been immortalised. It's already, there's now a mural in, I think, Istanbul. We'll post it on our socials as well, at INTL Clearance. It says, "Fight like your fans," which, play, you know, you hear that rhetoric, then you're like, "Oh, I just want the players to show a little bit of fight," you know. I don't think they ever actually mean that, but in that instance, like, absolutely brilliant, and he's well within his rights to do so.
He is not paying for a kebab ever again in Istanbul, at least.
Yeah,
I mean, there's going to be certain areas in the world that he will go and he will encounter a Turkish fan. Like, he just will not pay for a thing. And that's fantastic. I love that for him. Like, I honestly do.
Bright Asay Samuel, if you don't know, by the way, born in Nigeria, moved to England when he was 10 from Woolwich, but he came through Blackpool's academy, really made his name at Queen's Park Rangers before this move to Fenerbahce 3 years ago now. I remember we interviewed Les Ferdinand in season one, and Bright had just left QPR. Les Ferdinand was QPR director of football at the time. But he's stayed there ever since. And that's where we'll leave the club game. Because, again, it's an international break. There's so much that we have to say. Ben Brereton-Diaz plays at Sheffield United, on loan from Villarreal, made his name at Blackburn Rovers, but quite famous story, plays for Chile, mother's Chilean.
Discovered in Football Manager.
Yep, fans realised through the database on Football Manager that there was a guy in the Championship, young striker, that had Chilean heritage, and so there was a campaign publicly to get him a call up, and it did lead to him being a fixture of the Chilean team over the last few years, like, and not just 27 caps so far, but a few goals in there, important goals in there as well. But there's been an issue. There is a new coach at Chile, Ricardo Gareca, appointed in January, and he dropped Ben Brereton-Diaz for the friendlies this week against Albania and France.
Yes.
Here are the quotes. "He was called up for the Copa America 2 years ago. He has had enough time to learn how to speak Spanish. It's something that I personally told him that I would like him to speak Spanish. I consider it essential for communication with his teammates, with me, with the coaching staff, with the people and with the press." So he was taken out of these friendlies with Albania and France because he doesn't speak Spanish. Look, I'm not judging. I was surprised he didn't speak Spanish. I would have thought having a Chilean mother in your household growing up would lead to bilingual happenings. But no, my man doesn't speak Spanish. And having been called up 3 years ago, still doesn't speak Spanish. Are you surprised by that?
So when he got called up, I followed his story intently because I just thought it was so interesting.
Yeah.
It was magic. He did say he didn't have as much connection with his Chilean side as he'd hoped, and he was hoping that with these call-ups, he would find it. Now, I know he did a Pepsi advert that was dubbed, because they basically he went straight from Blackburn to Chile, and Pepsi were like, "This story's great, so you're getting a Pepsi ad." Then
Yeah.
he literally was in the Pepsi ads in Chile, and he was like, "I wasn't ready to speak Spanish, so they dubbed it." But I was thinking he was enjoying playing for Chile so much, yeah, and he's been relatively successful there. 27 appearances, 7 goals, which obviously is not setting the world on fire, but considering like they've just picked him up from the championship at the ripe old age of 21, 22, he settled in quite well. He's got some goals under his belt. I would have thought he'd be like, you know what? I want to learn the language. I want to be able to communicate with these guys so I can keep playing with them. I can keep banging goals, and I can, because Chile are a decent enough team that you will go
To
to
a World Cup.
international tournaments, yeah, and
This
represent them.
his competition in the forward line at Chile is Alexis Sanchez, who's 35, and Eduardo Vargas, who is 34. Like, there are youngsters coming through below him, but he is like a candidate to be starting very, very soon, if not already. And yeah, Duolingo is right there, man. Right there. You're also a Premier footballer on Premier League wages. You can afford a tutor if that's what it takes.
Well, he said a couple of years ago that he was doing lessons 3 times a week. I don't
Right.
know if he was stunting for the camera or if he just was no good at it.
Right.
Because obviously, this denotes that he just wasn't good at it, right? And that clearly it hasn't gone how he'd hoped. He scored a couple of goals in the Prem as well. I think he should really focus on learning. Learning, learning, learning,
Yeah.
getting it patterned down and playing internationally.
Yeah.
We're gonna have to drop this Diaz from your name soon. You're just Ben
Yeah.
Brereton.
Yeah. The part we haven't quite considered here, what if Ricardo Gareca is just a xenophobe? Like, what if he just,
Yeah, that's true.
Ben Brereton Diaz, for all we know, might speak very like broken Spanish, but like enough to get by and people, whatever. But the manager has an idea of like, we are too big a country to be relying on diaspora and stuff like that. He's not a Chilean man. We can't discount that currently.
It's actually true.
What is funny, regardless, is that he's already had to eat his words, because that was the story at the start of March that we were holding on to for the international break. Ben Brereton Diaz, as of this week, is in the squad. Like, don't know whether it was injuries or what, but like 2 or 3 extra players had to be called in, one of which is Ben Brereton Diaz. So Ben Brereton Diaz has not learnt the language in 10 days. So this is what I love about international management. People trip on their words all the time. But what we can say, given the theme of the pod, is that we celebrate people playing for their families' countries, leaving the UK to do that. You have to give it your all, though. You've got to treat it with respect that it deserves. And if that means learning the language, do it. Do you know what I mean?
I know it's going to be difficult, it's going to be tough, but it's worth it. Like, it's just absolutely worth it at the end of the day. And it's quite noticeable. You always see from players, obviously, this usually applies to club level, but when they don't bother, it's kind of like, oh, well, you know, I didn't feel like I fit in, so I decided to move somewhere else as soon as possible. But the ones who do take to it like a duck in water, and they're like, this is sick. This is sick. I want to come here every year. I want to do my best.
Yeah. Nigeria, they didn't, well, their manager's gone, but they did call up a bunch of players. They announced the squad for their games this week. They got Ghana the day of this podcast, Friday, in a friendly, and then they play Mali. They've appointed Finidi George, the legend, in caretaker charge. All the kind of UK-born and raised players that we spoke about in previous episodes that went to AFCON with Nigeria, they're all in this squad as well. So, yeah, Alex Iwobi, the Ademola Lookmans of this world. But there's a new name in there as well. A first call up for Gabriel Osho, the Luton Town centre back. He's 25, born in Reading, someone that's handled themselves in the Premier League. Makes sense to have a look at the guy. Nathan Teller is back in. We mentioned that last week because he missed AFCON and he's had great form for Leverkusen. And also, I guess, seeing Osho's call up, Elijah Adebayo did an interview with, I think, Sky Sports, also Luton Town. I think he wants to play for Nigeria too. So I don't know where he fits in that equation, because there's just so much forward talent for Nigeria. But
Do you reckon they play Osho and Bassey together?
I would expect Gabriel Osho to be better than, is it Akong, Trista Kong?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm not a massive fan of him. Yes, he scored in the final. Not a massive fan of him. So it's quite possible that Gabriel Osho is maybe the heir to that centre-back throne. But we are in a period now where, you know, Nigeria has had a lot of diaspora over the years. It's still always been discussed as like huge untapped potential. If Nigeria really embraces the extent of diaspora, particularly from the UK and the English football system, that they can really go to, you know, to like classic, like mid to late 90s levels. We are getting there. I feel like this is more than ever. These are more British born players than I can ever remember.
Yeah. It's a really interesting time for them. And I think they realize that they have the biggest scope of diaspora players, right? Like, they are one of the international teams with like the largest, really. And you could utilize that in a way that could make you real challenges, bona fide challenges. And you have not yet. So it would be great to see how they go forward from this and they utilize these players.
Yeah. But of course, we had that chat after the AFCON final where the diaspora players were the ones that got stick after the defeat.
Mm-hmm.
And Nigeria is a massive country. That's why there is so much diaspora. The many people far flung around the world. The diaspora have got better footballing upbringing, if you like, in terms of the academy systems they've come through and the league systems they come through. But there is still just this barrier of like, how many is too many before you're like, this isn't a Nigeria side anymore. It opens up this broader conversation about nationality, of identity, all these things of like, what makes someone from a country? What makes someone, you know, dual nationality beats people up over the head all the time. The concept of that is lost on people that don't have it. And they can't get their head around somebody feeling like they're from two places at the same time or whatever. There's some nuance to that that's missing. And
again, yes, this is not the podcast for it, but it'll be very interesting. Like, looking at it from a different angle, obviously there's been so much going on with people on X getting brave on social media and saying that there's not enough English players playing for England. Obviously, a useless racist dog whistle. But it's so interesting looking at it from another side, like being from Nigeria, like, and looking at it like, yo, how many diaspora kids can we have before this is no longer a Nigerian football team? Like, people forget it doesn't work one way. Yeah. Very interesting.
But yeah, if you're one of those players, the key is what you're giving it your all, you're being fully committed. Results on the pitch help a lot, but applying yourself properly in all ways, whether that's Brereton Diaz going off to learn the language or whether it's just actually being the best trainers, being the best ambassadors, that's how you make these kind of international football journeys successful. But on that, I thought was quite interesting. We're going to the Caribbean now. Jamaica are in the Nations League final for CONCACAF. They're the sort of North American and Caribbean region. They're in the finals this week. By the time this goes out, Jamaica would have played the USA in a semi-final. The finals, for whatever reason, are in Arlington, Texas, which makes me laugh because all it makes me think of is that meme with the polar bear. What's a polar bear doing in Arlington, Texas? So what are Jamaica doing in Arlington, Texas? They're playing the USA. And if they beat them, they play Panama or Mexico in the final.
I need a Jamaica-Mexico final. Platanos versus Plantin. That's what I need.
Would be that's a loud stadium as well. That's a loud atmosphere, even in Texas. So the squad is named for this, and it features familiar names, 12 English-born or raised players, Mikel Antonio, Damari Gray, Bobby Decordova-Reed, Jamalo, Casey Palmer are a few of those. There's a new name in there, though, a new call-up to Jamaica. Bailey Cadamartery. He's 18, plays for Sheffield Wednesday. He's just a young striker. And it's clearly a play by Jamaica. And I think Caribbean nations especially, because we'll get into this a little bit more, they're getting better at identifying these players earlier and trying to get them international recognition earlier, to either whether that's to fall in love with the system and the setup, or whether to just get there ahead of the home nations, for example. Bailey Cadamartery, if you've the surname's familiar, inevitably related to Danny Cadamartery, who used to play for Everton. Interestingly, it was Jamaica named their Nations League final squad with him in. So it was like, as if it was done. It was like, whatever. The same day, England under-19s put out their squad for their next round of fixtures. Who's in there? Bailey Cademartie. So he hadn't played for England under-19s. I don't think he played for England at any youth level up to this point. So the decision is very much put upon him immediately, and he has chosen England under-19s. And that's interesting because you're 18. There's a part of him could be like, oh my gosh, I'm going to play in like Texas. I'm going to play the United States and Mexico. And that would be sick. I'm going to like play some massive games. Or do you harbour hopes that, oh, I might get a move to the Premier League. I'm 18. If I do well, I'm playing for England under-19s. I could go play for England under-20s, under-21s, get into the senior setup.
It's a really difficult position they put him in.
You don't want to take it off the table. And yeah. I suppose the decision he has taken is quite an interesting one because you are allowed to go back.
Yeah.
Like, because he's playing for England under-19s, it's youth level. If he then, he's allowed to change allegiances. If it doesn't work out for England level, Jamaica will still be there for him if they want him.
Yeah.
In 3 years' time, 4 years' time. A lot of football can happen between now and then. Yeah, interesting seeing that decision made and that dilemma being put in front of someone at 18.
I don't want to be harsh. You're right. He can always come back to Jamaica at this level. You can do the under-21s, under-20s, under-19s England setup in the hope that you're in the setup and they like you and you can progress. He's at Sheffield Wednesday right now. He's not like a guaranteed bona fide starter, which leads me to believe that he wouldn't have been a bona fide starter for Jamaica either, which is like why it's quite interesting. It's kind of like, yes, it could have been amazing to go and play for them and to face Mexico or Panama and face, you know, America, being in Texas, all this stuff would have been great. However, you probably would have sat on the bench.
Yeah.
And because it's a professional competitive match, it's a competitive match, you could have struck off your chances of playing for England.
Mm. Damari Gray was an England under-21 international, never got an England cap, so pivoted to Jamaica. Mikel Antonio, quite later on in his career, has decided to go to, once I guess the hopes distinguish of England, goes to play for Jamaica, but has made an impact. But yeah, Bailey Cademartie doesn't want to be a part of it for now anyway. So the Caribbean nations increasingly red hot on finding the diaspora and convincing them more than ever, it seems. And we go to some old friends, Montserrat, managed by Lee Bowyer. They've got two friendlies with Antigua coming up. I don't know if they're official because I can't find any record of this anywhere except from Blackburn Rovers' website, because Blackburn Rovers put out quite an interesting video interview with one of their players who's been called up, Lenny Cirino. He's 21, left back, has not played for Blackburn on pro terms, but I think he's had a long injury layoff, so probably didn't break into the first team or have his opportunities earlier than now as a result of that. But he has accepted a call up to these Antigua games for Montserrat. And he mentions that his brother is also getting a call up and they're traveling together.
I love that.
This is so neat, Scully. I've had to guess who his brother is because it's just not, that information is just not out there. But having a surname like Cirino helps a little bit. There is a Fleetwood Town 18-year-old called Rafael Cirino. Fleetwood's not a million miles away from Blackburn. He, again, has never played for Fleetwood Town. He plays for Fleetwood Town under-18s. If it is him, it makes sense because his teammate in the under-18s, again, someone that has never played for Fleetwood Town, only the under-18s, is Dominic Richmond, who has 3 caps for Montserrat and a goal. So
love that.
Lee Bowyer, if it's not Lee Bowyer, it's a scout, it's a coach, it's the president of the Montserratian FA. They are digging into the Fleetwood Town under-18s, getting internationals and call-ups. It's improving them as a side, evidently. Dominic Richmond has already scored for Montserrat. But of course, Blackburn Academy players are going to be amazing for us. It's like a much more micro level of what we were talking about. Nigeria, huge country. Absolutely yeah. Massive population.
You'll find Nigerian, in every corner of this planet.
Yeah. Montserrat is a tiny, tiny nation. And so you've got to do these kind of marginal games, money ball kind of, who can play, who is eligible to play, and we will find them, and whoever they are will improve us. And I love that. Like, two kids from Lancashire who have never kicked a ball in senior football are going to play for this national team, and it is their first experience of senior football, men's competitive football.
I'm just interested to see how the process of finding was. Like, do you reckon it was literally a couple of people, couple of Montserratians were like, oh, well, I've actually got a cousin and his nephew played for Fleetwood Town on the 18s, or I've got a mate and he's got a sister-in-law. He's got two nieces who had kids who are actually at Sheffield Wednesday's academy. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, is it one of them?
We got to ask some questions of people. I, to be fair, something like Football Manager, if you have that and you've made it known to the people that provide that information, you could just check the back end of Football Manager, which is...
That's happening a lot. It's happening a lot recently.
Alternatively, you could just, I don't know, whether you tell your agent, look, I'm part Anguian or something, or, you know, Porter Maltese. Have a word. Like, just put the feelers out there. Like, get in touch with the FA. Let them know. Send a little YouTube video or something. See if they care. Like, there might be some of that going on. The agent might be putting in the work. But it's great. I love that this is a family affair. Like, it's like one got contacted. He went, oh, by the way, my brother's in this academy down the road as well. Probably want to have a look at him as well.
So, just have a double check.
Yeah. So they're going to some sort of warm weather training in Spain. Or I say warm weather, it's Montserrat. So they're just going to training in Spain. I'm not sure if the friendlies of Antigua are there. And they've got World Cup qualifiers in June. World Cup is the target. It's a huge pie in the sky target for Montserrat, but it's one they're taking very seriously and one we would absolutely love to see.
Montserrat and Lee Boyer, we are supporting, honestly.
We are. One international team that have less hopes of World Cup qualification, but will be in that same process as Montserrat. St. Kitts and Nevis, tiny nation. They have a population of about 50,000 people, 55,000 people as an estimate. And they've been disrespected this week, Scully. Because I don't know if you've been catching any of this.
Oh, I have.
San Marino have not won a game in 20 years. Quite famously, the worst team in Europe. And they are tiny. I've been there. I watched the England game there, the 10-0. It's a tiny place. There's only so many people they can gather from there. But they are, like, I think, one of the worst, lowest ranked sides in the world as a result of that as well.
They're in the bottom three, right? Still.
Yeah. What you don't get, really, because of the finances involved, you don't get a lot of the San Marinos playing teams a similar size to them because it doesn't make any logistical or financial sense. You're seeing these new things now with, like, the Nations League, where you're actually getting similar sized nations that wouldn't get each other in group stages of qualifying, actually playing each other competitively. But San Marino is still not that level. So this week, in an attempt, a transparent attempt to end their winless run, San Marino played or will be playing two friendlies against St. Kitts and Nevis at home within like 4 days of each other. So they played on Wednesday night and they'll be playing them again on Sunday.
Tom Palmer, if you're not a coward.
So the fair St. Kitts.
Yeah. I'm joking.
He is part petition, right? Yeah.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah. But guess what? That little advantage of having 15,000 more people, St. Kitts and Nevis, it got them over the line. Wednesday, San Marino 1, St. Kitts and Nevis 3. People flew in from around the world to support San Marino in this game because they thought they were finally going to see them win a game. No, sir.
I saw too many people talking it up.
Yeah, we're not being cynical. We're not party poopers here. We're backing St. Kitts and Nevis because 15 of their 24-man squad for these two games are British born. They get it. They're on the Montserrat wave with less publicity.
Yeah.
The names involved, it's a very similar level. I've got their team in front of me. Like, their biggest player didn't play. Romain Sawyers, who plays a wide player for Cardiff City. He didn't even, I don't think he was in the squad. I don't know if he's injured or what, but he wasn't in the matchday squad. Players at St. Kitts and Nevis that play in England, they've got their second choice goalie plays for Leek Town. Raheem Hanley plays for West Didsbury and Chorlton, a semi-pro in like the Northwest Counties, the ninth tier. You've got defenders from Walsall's under-18 team, Notts County under-21s, Barwell, who are in Hinckley, Leicestershire, Southern League Premier Division.
These sound like names that Americans would make up if they wanted to name British towns.
Exactly. Jay Williams, uncapped, first call up, plays for Crawley Town. Solihull Moors, Tyree Shade has played four games. Okay, that's in the National League. Kyle Kelly, 18, Liverpool Academy kid, first call up.
Got to keep an eye on him because Liverpool's academy is kind of good. You know,
they get games. They get games.
Yeah, Laxa, he might be someone who you might have to keep an eye on.
Yeah. Amari Sterling James plays for Ebbsfleet United. You've got Notts County under 21s, Diego Edwards, two caps. Kwame Thomas, uncapped, plays for Aldershot Town. Stockport County's academy, you've got Gabriel Vanterpool. Stockport County Academy, that's a League Two academy side.
Yeah.
And you are like, nope, straight in that squad, please. Thank you very much. So San Marino go ahead, which causes all kinds of delight and furor on the internet. The guy that concedes the penalty is Andre Burley. He's born in Slough. He's 24 years old, came through the Reading Academy, but is now at Oxford City, so the fifth tier of English football. And so, yeah, not a good start, but two set pieces. San Marino, terrible at defending set pieces, terrible at defending full stop, but set pieces especially. It's 2-1 before half time, and Andre Burley makes up for his mistake, scores the second goal to put them 2-1 up at half time. The third goal, the killer blow just after half time, is scored by Harry Panatiu. Now, the surname immediately caught my attention because I was like, your name is Harry, short for Harrison, Panatiu. That is very obviously to me a Cypriot surname.
Yeah, we know what's going on.
Yeah. Born in Leicester to a Greek Cypriot father and a Catician mother. Came through the Leicester Academy with players like Jeffrey Schlupp, Andy King. Played one league game and one goal for Leicester City. Love that.
Jeez.
But then sort of worked his way down to non-league, teams like Barrow, Nuneaton Borough. He's 29 now, had a very brief spell in Greece. He's now in Malta with a team called Sirens.
Okay.
As of January. And he's 29 and he has 12 goals for St. Kitts and Nevis now in 35 caps, which I think is very impressive. Obviously, to be fair, the opponents, I'm looking at his history of international goals now. Barbados, Turks and Caicos. He's got a hat-trick against Turks and Caicos.
I bet you love that game.
A goal against Aruba, a goal against Antigua, Suriname, Puerto Rico, or goals against San Martin, and then this goal against San Marino. But
Hey.
An interesting career. I love that.
His lineup is looking like a bit like Ronaldo's international goals lineup. Yeah. They scored against basically the same teams.
But who cares? Who cares? The key is he's bagging them.
And, this is
12 goals for the team. I'm just going to have a quick look now. Their record goal scorer has scored 24, so he's halfway there. But yeah, St. Kitts and Nevis, party poopers in San Marino. I watched the game on a telly. It was hilarious because a goal would go in, silence, because there is very obviously nobody there to see. Nobody's travelling from St. Kitts and Nevis to see them play San Marino. That is a nightmare to get there. It's just the coaches clapping.
I'm just looking at St. Kitts and Nevis's previous games. St. Lucia 2-0 to St. Lucia. Jamaica 5-0 them. The US 6-0 them. Trinidad and Tobago 3-0 them. Yeah. I'm just doing this to give you some context on where they are.
It was like their second
on the international stage.
It was like their second win in 9 or something like that. Like they're that level or two below the Jamaicas, the Trinidad and Tobagos, the
Guadalupes.
Yeah, like they're getting handed to them by the teams around them. So that's why they were picked for this, presumably. But they came out fighting. San Marino go again on Sunday. They play again in San Marino. But
listen,
you know, I'd be surprised.
It's one of those, Both St. Kitts and San Marino are in an awkward place where it's like, St. Kitts are obviously saying, listen, we're not as bad as San Marino, so don't buy it. And San Marino are like, please, we need to find somebody who is as bad as us, so please find them. I'm just looking at who St. Kitts have beaten in the past. St. Martin, they drew a Curacao.
That's a good result, by the way. Curacao, by the way, this is out of our remit. Mm. Curacao today played Hull City.
And how'd that go?
Curacao beat Hull City 1-0 today.
Love that. Okay, that was a banging result for them then.
Where did it happen? It happened in Turkey. It was in like a training camp. Why not?
All right, then I guess San Marino are going to have to play Aruba, St. Martin.
But this is the level you're having to go for teams that St. Kitts and Nevis are beating. Like, San Martin is like a tiny, tiny place.
Yeah.
Just absolutely.
Like, crazy. How many people are actually on the island?
Just to make that point, exactly. Again, it was about 50 to 55,000 in St. Kitts and Nevis. San Martin population is 32,000. Like, that is like Nottingham Forest ground. I think we mentioned them in last week's episode.
Yeah.
I think Nottingham Forest ground, that's actually the entire population. So that's what you're working with.
Well, keep fighting the good fight. San Marino, will you get a win in my lifetime? I'm not so sure.
Yeah, you're going to have to keep financing friendlies. You're going to have to keep going lower and lower and lower. I feel like the solution for San Marino may have to be Oceania. And we'll get to that a little bit later on. But we're staying in the Caribbean. And we're going niche here, Scully. I'm going to use that word again. I haven't used it for a couple of weeks. We're going pervy here. Like, we're going creepy. We're going into youth internationals in the Caribbean.
I don't think you should say we're getting pervy and then say we're going into youth internationals.
You're right.
I don't think those are two phrases that
you're absolutely
be
right.
Married.
You're absolutely right. But I am going nerdy here.
Okay, that's okay. Yeah, I like that one.
Okay. Grenada, another Caribbean nation. They're managed by Terry Connor, has been for years. Mick McCarthy's kind of loyal assistant, followed him around most clubs. And then even when Mick McCarthy was sacked at Wolves, Terry Connor led the team for the remainder of the season. And I think that's connected to this. Look, we've spoken already about Jamaica Montserrat being really, certainly quicker than they have been in years past, to get to younger players that are eligible to play for them in the UK. And I assume that Terry Connor's involvement at the top level of Grenada is probably got some feelers out, has got a great network here in English football anyway, and is trying to get some younger players into the system early. Well, about 3-4 weeks ago, a month ago, there were some under 20 championship qualifiers for CONCACAF, the Central American and North American.
Yeah.
Basically, 3 group games in 5 days in late Feb. And Grenada's under 20 team. This must happen a lot. Maybe it doesn't. I just thought I'd report this because I saw it and I was like, what? And did a bit of digging.
Mm-hmm.
2 players from the same area, actually. Both, I think, are from like Croydon. Certainly one of them is. 2 English kids played for the Grenada under 20s in these qualifiers. And they were called up for the first time. So one is Caleb Redhead, who is 17 and is a sub. Reb comes off the bench every now and then for Palace under 18s. So
great name, by the way.
Yeah, he's playing for his age group at Palace, but not as a starter. The other is Jaden Kwasi, who is from Shirley, I think. I think I know his family. Well, his mum cuts my mum's hair. Put it that way. That's how me and Jaden, we don't know each other, but we have mutuals. And call my mum a mutual is crazy. But
like they didn't birth both of you, but fair
enough. Yeah. Jaden's 17, midfielder, very well thought of, and he's at Fulham's Academy, which is quite prestigious, quite well thought of.
Good academy, yeah.
So these 2 17-year-olds are both playing for Grenada's under-20s, and they're in that system. And they both flew over there together with a couple of their families went as well, which is what a trip that is, by the way. Mum, do you want to go Grenada for 5 days?
And not bad at all, is it?
You know, if you just have to watch me play football a couple of times, and then you can do what you want for the rest of the time, because I'll be in the camp, so you can go off and do whatever you need to do.
I've got to be loving it.
But it's still a difficult level. Funnily enough, all these group games, I guess they do it to make it easy logistically. Again, the money can't be great financing all this. The group games for their qualifiers, all in St. Kitts and Nevis, of all places. But it wasn't like this poetic move for Jaden and Caleb. They lost 2-1 to Bermuda. They lost 2-0 to Jamaica. And then they drew 4-4 with Martinique, another sort of French territory. Yeah. But in that 4-4, Caleb Redhead does score 2 goals. So yeah, he at least... I'm leaving with something, as they say, as Denzel Weston would say. It's not bad, but they don't qualify for the under-20 championships. They finish bottom of that group. But I just found that really interesting. If they like that, if they enjoyed that experience, they're 17 years old. If they're good enough for that level, they'll quite fancy going again. And maybe the next time they're called up, it might be for the under 21s or the full national side if they really excel.
And it's a bit tight. It's a bit tight. I think if they win those games, I think you have it determined in your mind that we can be a generation that goes on to really make a dent in CONCACAF.
Yeah, these are two. They're both playing for very good academy sides. They're probably they're winners. And so going to this, it might have been deflating. However, however, the amount of international football and adventure that you could get under your belt before you're 21, again, they're 17. If they are ever kicking on to something and maybe considering themselves good enough to play for England, if that's what they want to do, how much they could be playing for Grenada for like 3 years before that ever comes an issue. Like
before they've even got to 21, you say, "Yeah, I've been to Grenada, Saint Kitts, Jamaica, Bermuda."
I just like that. I like that these football associations are playing smarter. I like that they, whether that is having managers like Terry Connor or Chris Kawamia that used to play for Arsenal and QPR. He is a manager for, I think, the British Virgin Islands. And there's a little network. There's a through line there where they're able to just pick these players out, the Lee Bowyers, to go, right, actually, I can sell this project as a familiar face. And yeah, just interested to see if that develops and whether they get the taste for it and whether they do more, because it was certainly, in the long run, the Grenada national team, if you've got people who have been in the setup for 3-4 years prior as well, you know what it's like with the younger sides. If you've been playing together for a while, when you make that step up together, you play better. So it's not...
Yeah, you feel like you've been... You know each other. There's a chemistry that's been built.
It's not these random strangers being dropped into the senior setup and having maybe the potential kind of conflicts that we were talking about earlier. An unusual one. I've got one more youth-led story, and it is another Palace one because that's where I'm seeing these. But I thought this was really interesting. So you've just had in late Feb, CONCACAF under 20 qualifiers. Around the same period and early March, you also had, and this international break, you've also got the UEFA under 17 championship qualifiers. Slovakia under 17s have called up Samuel Lasale, who, from what we can gather, he's 16, plays for Palace's under 18. So he's above his level for Palace. So decent player. Unusual, because looking at the photographs of the training camp that we do have, Samuel's mixed race. And I think you found out, right? He was like Zambian.
Yes.
So a very unusual mix. Half Zambian, half Slovakian.
Yeah.
Born in England.
And
he's been called up by Slovakia under 17s. And while he's very much like stands out in the squad photo, Slovakia not being the most obviously diverse place in the world from an ethnic perspective, but he has picked them, he is playing for them, and he has made an impact, a significant impact in the under 17 championship qualifiers. They were in a small batch, they played in Greece, came on after an hour and assisted the winner in his first game against Switzerland. Next game, he starts against Greece, who are the hosts, and scores a winner in that 1-0. The last game of their group is against Ukraine, who are, by the looks of it, like one of the favourites to win the whole thing, never mind the qualifiers. And they lose 3-0. But pretty much they are through to the finals already as one of the best second place teams. So he is now gone from just someone, a 16-year-old playing for the Palace youth side, to this summer going to the UEFA under 17 championship finals in Cyprus at the end of the season. Like,
it's
that's fun. Just get
it's fascinating.
You get in that system, go and do it.
Everyone assumed he was Nigerian, as I said, because you'll find a Nigerian person in every corner of the world. Yeah. So that's how I first came across him. People retweeted him saying, "Oh my God, like, whose Ibo dad was this?" That went to I did some digging. I found out that he is Zambian. And even more interesting, the other reason why he came to attention is we have a friend who works for Roc Nation. I'm not sure if you know him, actually, Joe. He might just be my friend, but he works for Roc Nation Sports. Right. And young Samuel is signed to Roc Nation at 16. So there is high hopes for him. Like, there is high hopes for him already. And this actually happened before he was called up, by the way. This was just off him, like, you know, signing for Palace, getting into the under 18 squad at 16. They're like, there's some potential with this kid, which makes his decision to go to Slovakia even more interesting, because clearly it's quite thought out. It's one of those where he knows he'll get game time. Clearly their youth setup is all right, because
They're decent at international level. They're not like,
yeah,
they are close to qualifying for major tournaments. Like, they're quite a respectable European outfit.
100%. But it's looking like the under 17s, like you said, are going to be one of the better teams in this tournament. So deciding to play for them works really well because it's bringing more light on his name. And it's looking like, you know, I can see a lot of countries trying to vie for his signature as he gets up. Obviously, he's going to have to choose between England, Slovakia, and Zambia.
Yeah.
Who knows if he'll go for England? But yeah, it's interesting.
Logistically, playing for the Slovakian youth team is way more easier than Zambia, as you
Yeah,
can
of
imagine.
course.
Coming from England back and forth.
Of
Flights
course.
are cheaper, all that. But yeah, I think you're also playing for Slovakia as a mixed race guy, knowing that you're probably going to break some ground there. Like, there's some bigger picture stuff that, whether or not he is even thinking about that at 16, maybe Rock Nation Sports are. But just,
It's true.
I know that these are Palace kids playing, and that's how I found out. And I'm not just going to talk about Palace players getting called up. I'm not going to talk about Luke Plange going to HKK Helsinki. I'm not going to do every time, but there are some very interesting ones in there. And I feel like this Samuel Lusali story is one I'm keeping an eye on for sure, because that's just like, that's very unusual.
I'm locked in. I wish him the best. And like, let's be honest, getting signed by Roc Nation Sports at 16, that is a mark of faith, right? It's like, we believe you're good enough to go all the way. So we're investing early in the hope that you take it to the next level. That is like a strategy from an agency that is saying, we have watched enough of you to believe that you're going to make it. And under 18's Palace, when you're 16, is no joke. We have something to be watching. We definitely have something to be watching.
Yeah. Our final stop. Somewhere, I don't know if you've heard of, Scully. Do you know where Nauru is? Nauru.
I have never heard of this place. This is new. I've learned something today on this show.
And this
I learned a lot, but this is like, I'm learning something geographically.
This is a place you're not going to get many updates from, so on a footballing sense. A very small island in Micronesia. I'd say northeast of Australia, northeast of Papua New Guinea, even by that Polynesia, Micronesia, Oceania corner. The standards of those islands that are all far apart. This is far apart from a lot of those. Like, it is remote by those standards, even in that area. Population roughly of about 12,500 as of 2021. Like, that is a League One, League Two stadium. They are trying to kind of work towards potential OFC membership. So that's the Oceania Football Confederation. And therefore, if they're in the OFC contention, there's possibly FIFA membership there as well. There are lots of checks you have to meet to do that. And they are such a small island. There's just infrastructural obstacles in terms of stadiums and criteria to meet that has just meant they've never had a national team officially up to now. They've had like select 11s have played like ceremonial games like two or three times. Like, that's what we're talking. But the effort, the infrastructure to make this stuff happen has just not quite ever been there. Except very recently, they've gone for it. They've got a guy called Charlie Pomeroy involved in this project, who is quite interesting. So he was Stevenage director of football very briefly about years ago. But he co-founded a team in Cambodia, and he still manages it, called Angkor City. This project, it's bigger than just a football club, but they are in the second tier and it's his thing. The Nauru project also includes Paul Watson, who is the brother of Mark Watson, the comedian that's been on like Taskmaster and Mot the Week, Bristol guy. Funnily enough, Paul and Mark were both at that San Marino St. Kitts game, by the way, to cheer on San Marino, one of those that were let down. Paul Watson,
you picked the wrong side, buddy.
Paul Watson is us 10 years ahead, by the way. Paul Watson said, I reckon I could manage a football team, and just goes around the world, sends lots of emails, and gets lower and lower and lower until he finds these kind of micro nations that are not FIFA members or whatever, but could do with just take any help they can get. And he managed the islands of Pompeii, the Federated States of Micronesia as well. He had a spell there. And he's written a book called Up Pompeii, which I highly recommend, by the way. If you're a fan of this show and the ideas about it, that's someone you definitely want to follow. He's got his own podcast, The Sweeper. But yeah,
that's our end goal, isn't it? That's where we're vying to get.
Yeah, exactly. I think we still think we could play, which is maybe a bit more. But yeah, Paul and this Charlie Pomeroy guy, they make this concerted effort to do the things that are needed to kind of get a national team off the ground for this tiny island of 12,500 people. Paul Watson's been, like, you know, helping to organise kit designers, and they've now selling the kits, making some money for the team, and keeping awareness up among people like us who love these kind of stories. The latest step of this, Nauru have appointed their new team manager and just general ambassador for their soon-to-be-launched national side. And it's Dave Kitson, ginger striker. He used to play for Reading, Stoke, Portsmouth. Dave Kitson will be leading the Nauru national team moving forward until I don't know when. Because of where they are, because how small they are, it's not a full-time gig. It's one you can come and go. Dave Kitson, by the way, strongly rumoured to be the secret footballer. I don't know if you ever read
yes,
those over the years. Yeah,
the secret footballer.
But he clearly loves football if it is him, and loves the game. And proof of that is taking charge at the Nauru team. The announcement of him comes with all these other plans that they've pushed. They've launched this mini tournament with other regional, like Micronesian islands. They've got a tournament next summer with Kiribati, Marshall Islands, Tuvalu, Palau, and the Federated States of Micronesia. These are all like islands, hundreds of miles.
I have no idea. I know of Micronesia. I had no idea of the individual names of the islands besides the Marshall Islands.
Yeah.
So this is, I'm going to be tuning in. I'll be honest. I'm interested in seeing what Dave Kitson did.
I don't even know if you can tune in. That's the thing. This is just.
Yeah, like, it probably won't be televised. It could be on Twitch. I feel like it'll be on Twitch.
Could be. I don't know what the internet signal's like in Micronesia, to be honest. But they have a friendly schedule with American Samoa this summer, who, of course, are quite famously one of the worst FIFA members.
Yes.
In the world.
We've just listed about 7 countries that could go toe-to-toe with San Marino, to be fair.
Yeah, it's just getting them there. That's the trouble. Flying them out there. And I love, for example, St. Kitts have to play San Marino twice because it's too expensive to not do it. You're there. It's an international break. You can't afford to do that and then play another team. You're like, I guess we're here. We'll play you again in 3 days. So yeah, Dave Kitson, I don't know how much one person can bring. I guess being a Micronesian island, people do leave. So maybe there's people in Australia and New Zealand who are part Nauru. It might be very, very few people. I don't know if that's simply the plan. It's like, we've got to find people that we can play, that can call up like Montserrat did, like Grenada did, like Jamaica do, like Nigeria do. This might simply be about, can we get a ground, and can we just coach the players that are here, the people that like playing football, can we coach them into being an enthusiastic, serviceable football team?
It will be really interesting to see how this develops. I really want to have a look at their kit. We should slap that on our Instagram and our socials. INTL clearance for all of you listening who want to have a visual of this kit. I've just gone to look at it right now. Pretty good.
Yeah, even in that part of the world, there is someone on international clearance duty trying to make things happen, trying to find their way into football management, trying to improve teams, improve players in the furthest away as is physically possible from the United Kingdom itself.
I'm locked in. I might even get a kit. You deserve a treat, Joe. Why not? I might have to. Listen, we've got to root for the underdogs. I feel like if they ever eventually play San Marino, I'm rooting for them. San Marino, the winless streak has to continue, I'm afraid.
I mean, there's, in terms of international management, one of the lowest places you can start and the farthest away. So you've got to love it. And he loves it, so we love it. And don't anticipate, listener, many updates from that until they play American Samoa. This could well be the last time we ever hear about that. Do you know what I mean? But it's just mad. I love that people are just enthusiastic generally. The implications of what they can achieve, it's so, you know, there's only so much that can be done, even if they have a blinder. But they're doing it because they love it.
Well, now they know. Hopefully other people have learned something alongside us. Because I feel like I've actually learned a lot today. Yeah.
Which is what I hope happens when we get this pod right, you know. Can give people a deluge of information, particularly on weeks like this when we don't have a guest interview or anything like that to give us insight. When we're providing the information inside ourselves. You can go on for a while. We can get a bit lost. We have to hold ourselves back a bit. Listener, try and imagine that everything you've heard is not even what we recorded. There was even more in the record. We've edited this down to the length it is for you at the moment. So there's no saving us from ourselves. We just hope you enjoy it. And
if you have enjoyed it and you want to learn more, you know where to find us. At INTL Clearance everywhere, on the Instagram, on the TikTok, on the Twitter, or X as it is now called. Sorry. Still haven't got quite used to that one.
I'm not pulling you up on that ever. It's okay.
And yeah. Oh, is there anywhere else they need to find us? I think that's it.
I would say, could you please rate us on whatever podcast feed, yes, or whatever app you're getting us from? I've come to discover, I know people just say to do that. It actually does help us a lot with a few things in terms of algorithms, in terms of broader editorial support. Not
please walk, pull, rate, jump. Review 5 stars. If you think we're 4 stars, tell me why. Message us and say, hey, we'd like more of this from you.
If you leave a 5-star rating in the review, if you have nothing to say, tell us your favourite players, your favourite people that played abroad, your favourite Brits that played or coached abroad, and we'll read some of those out. People that you would like to hear us speak to or speak with. Those emails could even be just in the reviews, and that works for us. That makes it interesting. But yeah, thank you for listening this week.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for your patience.
International clearance during international break. I need to go and check the scores. So for the listeners, we're recording this during some of the games.
From a British perspective, there's not a great deal. Matty Cash came on at half time for Poland against Estonia and then was subbed 10 minutes later. So I presume that's an injury. But other than that, most of the teams playing, I don't think there are any British contingent other than obviously Wales. Wales beat Finland 4-1. Poland will play Wales in a playoff final. The winner goes to Euro 2024. That will be played at Wales's Cardiff City Stadium on
Tuesday. It's going to be a good matchup.
On Tuesday. That will be riotous. That's a really tough game for Wales. But hey, we'll see. We'll be back next week for more international clearance and international break. I've been Joe Walker.
I've been Scully.
You take care.